بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم مصطفى محمد
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد
وأهل بيت الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين روحي وارواح العالمين له الفداء رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقه قولي. Before I begin today's lecture, then there was a question that was asked which I feel was relevant about yesterday's lecture. It will help make yesterday's lecture complete. Yesterday we were talking about what the hadith said was hating the people of this world. And what does that mean? One of the conclusions that we came to was that in order for us to advance spiritually, we have to minimize our contact with people who have worldly and materialistic values. A question that arises is this: is it the case that this also applies to Muslims? Because the way we put it, we're good? Salawat, please.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Salawat par Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
The question is this: that yesterday we were saying that in order for us to advance spiritually, one of the steps is that we have to minimize our contact with those who do not share our values. I would like to be somebody who's spiritual, who's trying to get closer to the Imam of my time, to be one of the elite soldiers of the 12th Imam in his absence. I have to surround myself by people who encourage me to reach that goal. So then that came up, well, what about the non-Muslims? We had a discussion about that. How should I interact with them as a Muslim? And how much time should I spend hanging out with them? But the question is this: what about Muslims? What about if there's a Muslim who's a Muslim by name, but when I look into that Muslim's personal life, I see all of those values which I was saying were values of those who don't accept the next world. That Muslim has those values. So what happens to that person? Am I supposed to associate with them? Am I to consider them one of the people of the Akhirah who I'm instructed to love? Or no, consider them one of the people of the dunya? Now there's two ways of looking at this. There's one time when I look at this hadith and I want to point fingers. I want to say, okay, well, look at these other brothers and sisters. Are they people of the hereafter or are they people of the dunya? If they're people of the dunya, I have to be careful about associating with them. Salawat.
Allahumma
salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. This microphone is giving us problems today. It's causing problems. Okay, so the question was this: that when it comes to the people of the hereafter, or the people of the dunya, does that apply to non-Muslims or Muslims also? And the answer is, it also applies to Muslims. So one of the things that I have to do if I want to advance myself on the spiritual path is surround myself with people who believe and practice the way they should be doing, and minimize my contact with those who don't. And we talk, that doesn't mean separating ourselves, it doesn't mean becoming self-righteous, but surround myself with those people I want to be like. As the hadith said, a man is on the religion of his friends. So now how we can use that for self-building is that, suppose I look into my own life, and I see in my own life some of those values of the Ahlul Bayt, which I know Allah wants, aren't in my personal life. Then instead of me pointing fingers at others, I don't want to be a problem and an obstacle for other believers who are trying to go on the spiritual path. I have to check myself and make sure I have these values in my life. Hadith. This is from the same discussion we're having, that where our discussion is about the hadith of Mi'raj. It's a long hadith. We're only able to talk about certain selected parts from the same hadith now. Allah talking, Ya Ahmad, Laysa kullu man qal uhibbullah ahabbani. O Ahmad, it is not the case that everybody who says, I love Allah, loves me. A lot of people say that. There are conditions though. If you really love Allah, there's conditions. As the ayat of Quran says, إِن كُنْتُمْ تُحِبُّونَ اللَّهِ فَاتَّبِعُونِي. If you love Allah, obey me, the Prophet of Allah. So, in this verse, which is this surah, this hadith, which is talking about those spiritual traits we have to have, he says it's not the case that everybody who says they love Allah loves them. In this particular section, there are 26 traits mentioned that we have to have. One of them is this. He says, he does not love me until, this is what the hadith says, يَفِرَّ مِنَ الْعَاصِينَ فِرَارًا, until he runs away from the sinners, a terrible running away. He escapes. We want to do justice to this sentence in Arabic, what it means when we say he runs away, a running away. We would say, you know what, you guys don't have rattlesnakes here. Right? You know what a rattlesnake is though, right? Rattlesnake. Okay, if you went into your bedroom, you lifted up your sheet and you saw a rattlesnake, what would you do? That's yafirru min al-asin firara, that's that. You escape. So even when it comes now to people who, they're not living their lives according to the path of the Ahlul Bayt, even then, I have to be careful. I associate, but to the extent that it's necessary. Now, we keep talking about the coming of the 12th Imam. And I've noticed that there's two ways of approaching this, at least two ways, but two ways which are positive. We have a type of waiting of the Imam which is not positive. I'm sitting, I sit back, I wait to see the signs that are happening, and I hope that inshallah one day the Imam will come. There's the other way, which is the positive way, where I realize that I have a duty to my Imam. I want the Imam to return. I have to change myself. Within that positive approach, there's two ways. There's some people who know that the Imam is on his way, and they emphasize and tell us that in order for the Imam to return, you must do your duty. You must pray, you must fast, right? You as the Shia, that's the person who the Imam's waiting on, not the rest of mankind. We're not waiting on Israel to turn good. Israel, will you please stop being bad, then the Imam can come back? No. Me, you, will we stop being bad so the Imam can come back? You and I. So we have to work on ourselves. So one approach is just to emphasize that it's your duty. You want the Imam to return? Change. Elevate yourself from whichever position you're in. And no one can claim, I'm ready for the Imam to return. I'm all right. I'm righteous. We have a hadith that anybody who considers his 2 days when he takes account of himself at the end of the day, he says that today was equal to yesterday, has lost, paraphrasing the words of the hadith. Every day there's supposed to be improvement, spiritually. We don't plateau. I've gotten to this stage, alhamdulillah. No, now is next level, advancing and advancing. So now, saying that, the other approach of waiting for the Imam to return, and knowing that I have to do my duty, is to constantly keep the pedal to the metal. Constantly in adrenaline high. Always waiting and looking to see what signs of the Imam, what signs which have been prophesied by the Ahlul Bayt have taken place to remind myself and give myself that sense of urgency. I don't always have time to reform myself. The Imam is on his way. I can't relax. It's almost over. It's imminent. So now that approach, that's the approach I prefer. I like to be told those things. Don't tell me I can relax. Don't tell me I only have to do my duty. Let me know time's running out. So now, bearing that in mind, brothers and sisters, I want you guys to go to the YouTube. And in YouTube, Why is that? Because there's a lot of the signs of the coming of the Imam that we've heard about, that we've heard ulama speak about, but sometimes people will go and they'll put them in a visual form. And then you'll see, you start reading the words of the hadith of the Ahlul Bayt, you're like, uh-oh, I gotta change tonight, man. It's on, it's real, it's serious, it's now. Okay, so YouTube. I want you to guys to go to a site or a thing on the YouTube which is talking about the age of the appearance. The age of the appearance. We're not saying every single thing that's narrated in there, all of it is 100. No, just look at the site, see what the hadith of the Ahlul Bayt are, and then think. Use it as encouragement. And read about Sayyid al-Yamani, one of the signs of the coming of the Imam, Sayyid al-Yamani. Now you want to get a real rush, look in who and see what some of the ulama are saying is Sayyid al-Yamani. You know that the hadith of the Ahlul Bayt prophesies the revolution in Iran. We're not going to say 100% definitely, but if you ask me 100%, but you know, 95%, maybe. We've never had this happen in history, that a man would rise from Qom. The people would join that man. We have that knowledge passed, will pass from Kufa to Qom and go all around the world. You know, right now we have 10,000 foreign students in Qom who, brothers and sisters, leaving, going back to their lands and spreading the words of the Ahlul Bayt. Until the hadith says, there is no one who is uninformed about the religion. But then what's really interesting is you look at some of these things on the YouTube and you see that some people are saying, maybe the person who is Al-Khurasani is Ayatollah Khamenei. Maybe Sayyid Al-Yamani is Sayyid Nasrullah. And read the hadith yourself. Don't take it from me. Go to YouTube, read the hadith yourself. Then you start to really hit the panic button. I have to change myself. So then after that, so you listen to these things, you go online, you see these things, get yourself fired up and ready to go. And then listen to the words of Sayyid Nasrullah when he says that the road of Imam Khomeini is the road of the Mahdi. You follow down that road, the road that leads to the coming of the Mahdi is the road of Imam Khomeini. Read it for yourself. Look on the internet. And hear the words of Sayyid Nasrullah in your own ears. So then now, bearing that in mind, okay, now what are the hadith of the Ahlul Bayt on how to prepare myself and ready myself and change myself? And again, everybody can improve. Oh, I'm doing my wajibat. Oh, if you only think that all you have to do is your wajibat, then you know, might as well cancel Christmas. Go home. It's okay. No, we got a lot of work to do. So now what's the next trait? وَأَحِبَّ الْآخِرَةِ Love the next world. وَأَحْلَهَا Love the people of the next world. Brothers, I'd like to share with you a few hadith, brothers and sisters, a few ayat of Quran and hadith about what is waiting for you on the other side. If you stay fast, if you're a soldier of the Mahdi, if you resist in this world, resist the temptations, the shayateen that are all around you, and you decide to stand firm for Islam, what are you going to get on the other side? Just a few pointers. There's a hadith that explains, he says that Allah has created for everybody a place in paradise and hell. Everybody. And when you go to paradise, you will be shown the place that would have been yours in hell. And the hadith continues, it says, if anybody were to die out of happiness, those people who are the inhabitants of paradise, when they saw the place that would have been reserved for them in the hellfire, and they realized, I just waited a few days, I lived a few years, I did what Allah said for a few months, and I was able to make it to paradise. That person, when they see the person, the place they would have gotten in hell, if anybody could have died out of happiness, those believers would die out of happiness. Is that exciting? So now, very quickly, because we don't have time, I'm not going to read the Arabic part of the hadith, even though the sweetness is in the Arabic. But just the translation of the hadith is again from hadith of Mi'raj, and it's talking about those people who are zahid. They abstain from the dunya. They're not attached to the dunya. What do they get? The hadith starts out in this way. The least thing that will be given to the people who abstain from the haram part of the dunya, who are not attached to the dunya, the tiniest gift that Allah will give them is this. They will be given all of the keys to paradise to enter from any door they wish. The tiniest thing that will be given to you, all of the keys to paradise, any door you want to enter from. This hadith, let me quote you a hadith that Imam Khomeini mentions in his book, Adab al-Salah. He says that when you go to paradise, an angel will come to your door. An angel will come to your door and he'll ask permission to enter. I would guess the angel will knock respectfully. Can I enter, please? Can I come in? The angel has a letter for you from Allah, subhanahu wa ta'ala. This is what the letter says. مِنَ الْحَيِّ الْقَيُّومِ الَّذِي لَا يَمُوتِ إِلَى الْحَيِّ الْقَيُّومِ الَّذِي لَا يَمُوتِ Allah describes Himself in Quran as ever-living. الْحَيُّ الْقَيُّومِ The person who never dies. He says it's from the الْحَيُّ الْقَيُّومِ الَّذِي لَا يَمُوتِ إِلَى To the one who is الْحَيُّ الْقَيُّومِ الَّذِي لَا يَمُوتِ You and I, we're not going to die in paradise. We're there forever. The hadith continues. He says that surely I say to a thing, be and it is, and I have made you so that now you say to a thing, be and it is. In paradise, you can make things. You can create in paradise. You can create. So now, what are the other gifts? Allah says, I will not veil my countenance from them. One of the best blessings you'll get, the greatest of the blessings in paradise, is that you'll be able to see God and talk to God. There's physical blessings, those are wonderful. But the most wonderful of blessings is the pleasure of Allah and being able to talk to Allah. Ridwanullah Akbar. The pleasure of Allah is greater. So, he says, I will make them enjoy all types of enjoyment by speaking to me. You'll be able to sit down with Allah and talk to Allah in paradise. He says, I will make them sit with me in abode of truth, and I will remind them of the good that they did and how they suffered in this world. Some of these hadith are really, they make you almost sentimental. I'll give you what the hadith says. What happens is that Allah, in paradise, He apologizes to the believers for the difficulties they went through. You know, if you have two people who are lovers, in the beginning of a marriage, imagine the beginning of a marriage, two people are deeply in love, sometimes a couple will have fights. But you know what's sweet? And I'm not saying have any fights with your spouses, but you know what's sweet? Sometimes after that you make up. I'm sorry, the person comes over to you and they apologize. I'm sorry, I was wrong. Then you're just like, yes. Huh? So now look at the hadith. The hadith says that Allah will not apologize to any noble angel or prophet. He will only apologize to the poor Shia. If you weren't rich in this world, if you were poor, one of the gifts is that Allah is going to apologize to you. This is what the hadith, this is another hadith again from the Imam. He says, Allah will apologize to His needy servant the same way that a brother apologizes to another. Allah will make it up to you in paradise. He says that, I did not make you poor because you were insignificant in my eyes. It wasn't that you weren't important to me. No. He said that I want to show you what I've given you in replacement of that which I didn't give you in the dunya. When the believer sees that, he will say, what you've given me is enough. Allah will make it up to you. Hadith continues. It says that I will open four doors for them. One door which will be the door from which they will receive gifts from me in the morning and the evening. Brothers and sisters, we make these doors with our actions, our a'mal salihah. When we have good actions, it makes these doors. Allah sometimes describes them in the Quran. On brocaded couches reclining, facing each other, they will be waited upon by immortal youths with goblets and oars and a clear cup of fresh wine, which causes them neither headache nor stupefaction, and such fruits as they prefer, and fowls as they desire. You know, here in this world we recycle. One of the things that they say about paradise is that if you see a bird flying, one of those beautiful birds in paradise, and you decide, you know, I'd like to have that, you know, like chicken nuggets, the bird will turn into your meal. You'll eat the bird, enjoy the bird, then the bird will get back up and flutter back off. It's waiting for you on the other side. Another door. There'll be another door in which they will look at me through that door without any difficulty. Anytime you'd like to gaze on Allah's beautiful countenance, you look out the door, there Allah is. Then also there's another door. Now this one, this door is a little bit politically incorrect. Politically incorrect. This door says that there's a door, and in it they will look at the oppressors and see how they're punished. The believers in paradise enjoying the blessings in paradise, but then you look down in hell and you see the unbelievers, the enemies of God, Yazid, Saddam Hussein. I won't mention other names because then I'll get in trouble. They won't let me back in England. Some of these others getting punished. You see, in paradise, there's entertainment. Now, I know you think that's bad, so I'll give you an example and we'll move on. There was a movie that they showed on Iranian television, and that movie was called Braveheart. And in Braveheart, there's a section where the guy decides to get married. He's a very honorable person. He wants to get married according to his religion, but the nobles or the rulers have a policy of taking the women for themselves for one night. He's somebody who has ghairah. He's, you know, he's proud, he's defensive of his women. It's impossible. So he goes and he gets married in secret with a priest. And then the enemy finds out that somebody is trying to break the rule. We have to make an example of this man. And they go and they get his wife and they slit his wife's throat. Braveheart finds out. At this stage, the movie goes into slow motion. They show Braveheart come riding over there, right? I mean, for me, I wanted to stand up and cheer when I saw this. They show this type take out the mace. He goes to work on these cats. Right? Vengeance for bad people, that's good. I have to apologize. Yes, in Islam, in paradise, we have ayat of Quran now. It says that today, فَالْيَوْمَ الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا مِنَ الْكُفَّارِ يَضْحَكُونَ. Today, the believers will look at the kuffar and they will laugh. They'll be laughing. Right? So, yes, that happens. That's some of the blessings that are waiting for you on the other side. So now we come to the hard part of the hadith. The easy part of the hadith was to love the hereafter. Everybody loves the hereafter. Who wouldn't want to be in paradise? Who wouldn't want to be in paradise? But you know the tough part is to love the people of the hereafter. This one is tough for us spiritually. I'll give you some examples. But this one is not so easy. Loving other believers and treating other believers differently than you do non-Muslims or even your Sunni brothers and sisters. You treat believers better than you treat them. You love the people of the hereafter. You're a Shia of Amir al-Mu'mineen. What? I'm at your service. I go all out for you. Let me give you some. But this is tough though. It's not going to be easy. But this is a major stumbling block. If we cannot get this together, one of the reasons that the Imam doesn't come and the Imam is not happy with us is because we're not kind to other believers. I'll give you a story. This story is about a man, one of the best examples of A good Shia is Ali ibn Yaqtin. This guy was a man who served at the command of the Imam of his time in the court of the enemy ruler, Harun al-Rashid. And he was instructed to help out fellow believers. This is somebody, it's said in the hadith, that the Imam guaranteed that his body would never touch the fire. That's how elevated his status was. His body will never be burned by the fire. This is somebody, just to give you, to say who this guy is. One time he got a very, very nice cloak from Harun al-Rashid. And he thought, this wonderful gift from a king, this is only befitting for my imam. And some of the things they say, he sent his khums and he sent this cloak also, either as khums or as a gift to the imam. And he sends that to the imam. The imam accepts his khums, he pays his khums, the imam accepts that, but he sends back the cloak and says, no, you keep this cloak with me. They say in the story that he was worried, how come the imam did not accept my cloak? Then there was a problem with him and some of the people who worked at his house. They turned against him. And that servant or slave knew that he had given the gift of Harun al-Rashid to the Imam, the enemy of Harun al-Rashid. So now he went to Harun al-Rashid. He said, you know, this guy is actually a follower of that Imam. Oh no, how could that be? Yes, he is. You know that expensive cloak that you gave him that was befitting for a king? That cloak, he gave it to his Imam. He said, really? He said, bring this man to me, let's go. Either he goes to the office or to the man's house, or he comes to. And he said, what is that cloak? I hear you've been going, you've given that cloak to the Imam. He said, no, that cloak that you gave me, that's in my closet. I put perfume on that, I take it out, I remember you. He said, really? Yes, go send somebody to the house right now, investigate. They go to the house and they see the cloak is there. They say Harun al-Rashid lashed the person who went against him to death. Okay, so now you're talking about somebody, how close, you see how close the relationship is with the Imam? The Imam telling him this inside information, he's passing it back as being relayed. Now this problem had a problem with this trait, loving the Akhirah and the people of the Akhirah. He loved the Akhirah, but let's see now about loving the people of the Akhirah, so we can now see what our duty is. He was approached by one of the less fortunate Shia, a man named Ibrahim al-Jammal. Not rich, not a minister, not an important person. He comes, he runs a camel business, whether renting out camels or whatever like that. He runs this business. He comes and he wants to meet him. And he comes to meet Ali ibn Yaqtin, and Ali ibn Yaqtin doesn't receive him. I'm sorry, brother. I'm busy. I'm an important person. I'm a minister in the government of Harun. Can't see everybody who comes. And he doesn't see this brother. Apparently, the brother's heart breaks. You and I want to be very careful about breaking other believers' hearts. Later, Ali ibn Yaqtin goes to make Hajj. When he goes to make Hajj, after Hajj, he comes to see the Imam of his time. And when he comes to see the Imam of the time, the Imam rejects him. I won't let you come in. He says, Sayyidi, ma dhambi. He said, what is my sin? What have I done wrong? He said, you didn't allow one of my Shia to come and see you. He says, well, how can I make a... He says that I want you to go to Baqi. Don't go with any of your companions, your friends. You're such an important person. You go by yourself. You go, you'll find a saddled camel there. You're in Medina. This camel will take you by miracle to Kufa. Apparently in Iraq, in Kufa where the man was living. It'll take you to Kufa in one night. He gets on the camel and he's right outside the house of Ibrahim al-Jammal. He tells Ibrahim, please come out of the house. He says, who is it? He said, it's Ali ibn Yaqtin. He said, what is a government minister doing here at my house? He says, brother, by Allah, I want you to come outside. I need to talk to you. He compels him, he calls on him, by Allah, please come. The man comes out. He says that, what's the issue? What's the problem? They start talking. He says, the Imam has rejected me because of how I was wrong to you. Please forgive me. He says, Ghafarallahu lak. May Allah forgive you. He says, no, that's not enough. He says, I want you to forgive me. Then Ali ibn Yaqtin does something. He goes on the ground, lays down on his back, and tells Ibrahim, he says, put your foot on my face. I want to know that you're pleased with me. He says, no, I don't need to do it. He says, no, put your foot on my face. I'm the minister, I'm important. People come, they come for miles just to see me. I am humble to my fellow believers. After he insists, Ibrahim puts his foot on his face. He says, oh Allah, bear witness. Then he goes back to the Imam, and then the Imam accepts him. So loving the people of the hereafter, being careful about your duty to them. Now, to make it a little bit difficult, now let's talk practically, what does this mean? Give some practical examples. Let me see, I'm talking to myself, am I really someone who loves the people of the hereafter? Practical example. You know that when the hadith refer to the believers in this time, Akhiruz Zaman, you know what they say about us, the Prophet of Allah? The Prophet of Allah was talking to his companions and he said that those people who come in the end of time, those people are my brothers. The companions said, aren't we your brothers? He said, no, you're my companions, they are my brothers. He said, they believed in me and they never saw me. Amanu bi walam yarawni. They believed in me, they never saw me. We haven't witnessed the Prophet of Allah. We've accepted because it's truth. He says that the reward of each practicing member of them is 50 of you. We get more reward now for practicing than we will even when the Imam returns. Because it's so difficult now. Because the shayateen are all around us. Get more reward. So now when I go to see my brothers and my sisters, do I think of them? Do I make the niyat? I'm about to visit the brother of the Prophet of Allah. That's love of the people in the hereafter. You know that the believer has more respect than the Kaaba. More respect than the Kaaba. We have some hadith where Allah tells the servants on the Day of Judgment, apparently when He's questioning them, He says, why is it that you didn't visit me when I was sick? And the person says, Allah, you don't get sick, you don't become ill, you don't feel pain. He says, your Muslim brother got sick, you didn't visit them. So now, we see the position of the believers. Now let's make it even a little bit more personal. So for me, in order to be one of the elite soldiers of the 12th Imam, I have to have love of the people of the hereafter. I have to be kind to them. I have to indulge them. I have to smile at them. We shouldn't have so much infighting amongst ourselves. Hatred. Enmity. I haven't talked to this brother for years. This sister did this to me. We shouldn't have that. In addition to that, let's make it a little bit more personal. We are surrounded by people of the hereafter in our own personal lives. Our wives and our children. Our brothers and our sisters. How am I with those people of the hereafter? How am I with them? We'll start off first with children. And I want to speak to the brothers directly. Of course, the sisters also, the hadith, same hadith applied to them also. But with brothers, you know, one of the problems that happens sometimes in marriage is this, that sometimes the sisters feel that their husbands don't take an active role in raising and training the children. Sometimes you'll have a husband who provides, who does good, who comes home, who works late, who does these things. But how active am I in training and educating my children, passing on the message of Islam? In my practical life, they see me practicing. In my akhlaqi life, am I able to pass on these values of the Ahlul Bayt to the next generation? You know, we have hadith about the first 7 years. The first 7 years, we're supposed to set our children free. The hadith say that for the first 7 years, your child is a sayyid. He's the master. We don't order our children around a lot in those first 7 years. We talk to them, we're kind to them, we try and guide them. But we don't. That's for the next 7 years. The next 7 years, that's when it's commands and instructions and telling them to make salat. But for the first 7 years, we're supposed to be kind to them. Make those children feel loved and accepted. It doesn't mean, though, the ulama explained to us, it doesn't mean that you don't do tarbiyat of these guys. That you don't teach them Islamic etiquette. No, as a father or as a mother, for the first 7 years, where the child is more free, then I still teach the Islamic etiquette. In addition to that, 7 years praying and fasting, sometimes people wonder, how come my child, my daughter is 9 years old, and she's not wearing hijab properly? Well, we're supposed to start with the wajibat from before that. The Ahlul Bayt say, try, we have hadith, about teaching your children to pray and making them pray from seven. You wait till the guy's 15. Brother, now it's wajib for you to pray. Young knucklehead, no daddy. But if we've been talking to him, explaining to him, telling him, oh, it's wajib, we pray. And then when he prays, go to the other family members. MashaAllah, my little son has started praying. Alhamdulillah. Let others praise him. Let him get that encouragement. So playing with our children. You know, we have stories of the Ahlul Bayt playing not only with their children, with other people's children. The story of Amirul Mu'mineen, he goes to the house of the woman. She has orphans. Amirul Mu'mineen playing with them. We need to play with our children. It's nothing wrong for me as a father to sit down and play with my young sons or my young daughters. I'll give you an example from the life of Imam Khomeini. Imam Khomeini, he had a grandson. I believe his name was Ahmad. I'm not Ali. His name was Ali. Sometimes he would tell Imam Khomeini is, you know, he's marja and he's leader and he's, right? That's the picture you and I see of him. He would tell Imam Khomeini, I want you to be my horse and go down on all fours. His grandfather would be the horse of Ali. Nothing wrong with playing with your children. Play PlayStation. Huh? Play sports. Play with the children. Spend time with the children. Be the children's friends, and then also tell the children what's haram and what's halal. Another thing, one-on-one times, if you have more than one child, sometimes have one-on-one times with the children. All of the children, all four, all five, you know, mashallah, Muslims have a lot of children, and that's great. No, I'm just apologizing. We want to be Westerners. One child is enough. No, and many children. But if you have many children, one of the nice things to do is to have separate times for them, one-on-one times. Take your daughter out. Take your son out. Things we can do as fathers. And then when we're imparting values, you know one thing that happens? I have children. Right? So sometimes children irritate you. Right? Because you tell them to do something and they don't listen. And you tell them again, they don't listen. They're like, why, daddy? So if you're like me, you're like, because I said so. That's why. But instead of doing that, we can use these opportunities to impart our values. Why is it that we don't do this? Because we're Muslims, and Muslims don't do these things. Yes, we're different than non-Muslims. Yes, your friends do all of these things. We don't. We're Muslims. Pride in being a Muslim from a young age. We have to move on. Another one of the people of the hereafter, who we see in our daily lives, are our husband and wife. Sometimes we're not so nice to them. I brought a hadith. This is a hadith. It's a backbreaker, so brace yourselves. This hadith starts off talking about what women should be like, and then after that it talks about what men should be like. So brace yourselves. Whoever has a wife who bothers him, Allah will not accept her prayer or any of her good deeds until she assist and please him. It's not enough. I'm a spiritual person. I go to Dua Kumail every Thursday. How are you with your husband? How are you with your wife? Are you kind at home? I'm religious. I don't have time for these things. Okay. We'll see each other on the day of judgment. It says, even if she fasts her entire life, if she stands in prayer, if she frees slaves, gives away wealth in the way of Allah, she'll be the first one to enter the fire. And a man will face the same burden and punishment if he is hurtful and oppressor. Sometimes men and women, we can be very hurtful at home. So just some reminders. You know, we have verses in the Quran that tell us to be nice to people, to speak nicely. Verse of Quran, Surah 2, and verse number 283. وَقُولُوا لِلنَّاسِ حُسْنًا. Say beautiful things to people. Speak nicely to the rest of mankind. Be kind to them. We have hadith that say, جَمَالُ الرَّجُلْ فِي لِسَانِهِ. The beauty of a man is in his tongue. Be sweet to him. Talk to everybody. That's for people in general. What about for in the house? And again, I'm going to get on the brothers. It's okay, the sisters are listening, but the sisters, don't pay attention. I'm talking to the brothers right now. What about saying beautiful things in the house? What are the rewards of saying beautiful things in the house? Sometimes brothers are a little bit rough in the house. Tough! But what are the benefits about saying beautiful things in the house? The hadith says this, that saying beautiful words in the house makes you beloved. يُحَبِّبْ إِلَى الْأَهْلِ. It makes you beloved to your family. وَيُدْخِلَ الْجَنَّةِ. Makes you enter paradise, among other things. Because I didn't mention all of the fawaid and benefits. So one of the things that we should do for husbands who want to be those soldiers of Imam Mahdi, make sure we tell our wives that we love them. Again and again, always. We have an hadith. If you love someone, inform them. What do you think it's supposed to be if you're talking to your wife? If you, the hadith says your brother, your Muslim brother, you love him, tell him you love him. What about your wife? If you're telling everybody else, tell your wife you love her. Again and again, I love you, I appreciate you, you're everything. Tell her. The hadith says that if a man tells his wife this, it will never leave her heart forever. So now a lazy Muslim like me will hear that and be like, if I tell my wife I love her, it'll never leave her heart. So I'll tell my wife, honey, come in here. I love you. It'll last you until the day of judgment, inshallah. Because it'll never leave her heart. No, tell your wife again and again. Keep telling her, reassure her. I love you. I care about you. You're everything. Give gifts to one another, especially to your wife. Give gifts. The brother's saying, oh, your sheikh is getting us in trouble. No, I'm telling you, hadith, I can't. Hadith. Wives give gifts too. Because the hadith says, if you give gifts to one another, you'll love one another. So when you're giving gifts, give small gifts. Sometimes we think like men, right? We think like men. So I'll give you an example. If you buy, any of you brothers, if you buy me a 4x4 truck, I'll remember you to the end of my days. This brother, 4x4 truck. Some men make this mistake when giving gifts to their wives. They work hard for years, they save, and then after 20 years they buy their wife a house. That's one gift. She likes many gifts, small gifts, a card, a reminder, I love you, I care about you. Talk to your wife. Talk to your wife. The ulama, we're talking about spiritual instructions. One of the spiritual instructions of one of the ulama, he said, set aside a certain time of your day just to talk to your wife. Just sit down with her, listen, 10 minutes, 5 minutes. For this period in time, you're important. Talk to her. Let her pour her heart out to you. And don't do anything else at that. Don't check your email. No, just sit and talk to her. Instructions. Right? So also, public displays of affection. Be affectionate in the house. Be affectionate. Hold your hand. We have hadith. If a man holds his wife's hand, he'll get 10 good deeds and 10 sins will be erased. If he really wants to be a soldier of the Imam, if he gives her a peck on the cheek, a little kiss, he'll get 100 good deeds and 100 sins will be removed. Be affectionate. Public displays of affection, are they allowed in Islam? Yes. Your husband and wife, obviously, if it becomes to the extent that it's sexually arousing, other people are watching, no. But otherwise, you're sitting in the house, you see them? How are you doing? Hug. Huh? You can do the small things. Right? So, do that. Also with sisters. Now, you know, sisters, you have to brace yourselves also, right? Because sometimes, you know, instructions for you also. For the sisters also, making sure that we dress up in the house. I mentioned this the other day in the question and answer. I don't know if I mentioned in the speech. Sisters need to dress up in the house and be gorgeous. We have hadith about this. Always. The best hadith. The best of your women are the women who show off for their husbands. Hadith. The right of your husband over you is that you wear the best of your clothes, the best of your jewelry, the best of your perfume, and present yourself to your husband morning and evening. Strut your stuff. Important. They have to do this. Some sisters, they feel uncomfortable. How, if I dress up in the house, if I show a little bit of my legs, if I show my arms, no, maybe the children, they'll become psychopaths. I don't know. I'm careful. First of all, sister, nobody's going to become a psychopath. You're not wearing, you know, you wear high heels in the house, wear a shirt, show a bit of legs, show your arms. It's okay, no damage, no harm, it's okay. Big complaint after marriage. My wife doesn't dress up in the house. There's some women don't even do their hair in the house. Don't shave. Mustaches. That's not cool. We don't like that. Dress up, look good all the time. One last thing also, because again, we're talking to the sisters. Right? Very important for the sisters, in addition to loving their husbands, respect. Respect. See, sisters, when we're with husband and wife, we show love how we would like to receive love. So sisters know instinctively that they need affection, so they show much affection. They shower their husbands with affection. You know one thing that a man needs even more than your affection? Your respect. We're not Westerners. I grew up in the West. I'm taught to be independent, to tell my husband how it is. Tell him no. And that's what they do. Westerners, you see? How they treat the husbands? The husband, and you look at movies, television, they're so stupid and foolish and weak. But Muslim men aren't like that. Muslim men are real men. The head of the household. We're not going to apologize for being old school. This is the natural order of the universe. The man has been placed in charge of his family. Ayat of Quran. So instead of fighting this, embrace that natural order. Now let me tell you the hadith. Talk about, this is a need for men. Sisters, brace yourselves. The Prophet of Allah, he says, لَوْ أَمَرْتُ أَحَدًا أَنْ يَسْجُدَ لِأَحَدٍ. If I were to tell one person to prostrate before another person, لَأَمَرْتُ الْمَرْأَ أَنْ تَسْجُدَ لِزَوْجِهَا. I would have told women to prostrate before your husbands. Respect. One of the reasons people have problems in their marriages is that they talk disrespect, nag, shout at their husbands. They scold him just like he's one of the children. That's not acceptable to show that respect. So, now enough shouting. We end, inshallah, with a dua. We ask Allah by the right of Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad that we become the true soldiers of Imam Mahdi. We ask Allah by the right of Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad that he accept what was said and heard in his way. We ask Allah by the right of Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad that he hasten the reappearance of our master. We ask Allah by the right of Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad that he protect all of the believers, all of the Maraja, and especially the leader, Sayyid Ali Khamenei. Salawat. Allah.